Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right, Ntabiseng Dubazana is here, and this marks the beginning. Well, we're not in the beginning. We are almost at the end of the week, but we are in Wills Week.
Yes.
We had started Wills Month. We're now in Wills Week.
That's correct.
And lots of questions that relate to people's wills and
yes,
so on.
Yes.
And maybe to begin with, we need to then be very clear about what constitutes a will. A little paper that I have written on my deathbed, or does it have to be signed in any other way? Does it have to be logged in any other way? Does it have to be registered with a particular authority? Mm. What constitutes a will?
So a will, in terms of the Wills Act, is a document. So it's a written document wherein you express your wishes on how your estate needs to be distributed upon your death, right? So it needs to confirm that it needs to be written down. You need to have signed it.
Let's talk about the signing.
Yes. So signing, they've accepted that the law has accepted that not everybody is literate or is able to sign.
Mm.
So I can sign my whatever.
Mm.
So they've accepted that an X can be put there as a mark, but there's conditions
mm-hmm.
to that X. So if the person who has no ability to sign puts an X as a form of their signature there, then there has to be somebody like me who's a commissioner of oaths
mm-hmm.
who then confirms that indeed that X does belong to the testator of that particular will. And then at the end of that will, I have to attach a certificate wherein I confirm that I was present at the time that this will was signed. I confirm that this person indeed did attach this particular X or even a thumbprint, and that person was not coerced. It was done freely and voluntarily. All those sound and sober senses, etc., etc.
Does it have to be done in the in the presence of someone who is a legal authority? Let me put it that way.
There is no obligation in terms of Section 2, capital letter A, I think, of the Wills Act that says that it has to be reduced to writing in front of an attorney or a peace officer or whatever the case may be. As long as it conforms to the basics, which is it is written down, it has your information, it has your identity number. That's become one of the important things lately, because somebody can just bring a will and say, listen, this is what it is. But if it's a will that's dated prior to this particular case, I just forgot which year it was decided. I think it was in 2015. I could be wrong. But anyway, your identity number, your name, and it is written down. It has witnesses, two witnesses who are over the age of 16. And
so if you tell children who are under the age of 16, it's not going to help you?
Yeah, no, it's not going to help you at all.
And one individual is older and one younger? Not good enough.
Not good. It's not going to be a valid will. They all have to be over the age of 16.
So if, you know, last will and testament
yes.
could be happening, as I said, on someone's deathbed.
Yes.
So you must have the date, you must have the ID number, you must have the signature.
Yes.
Does a will without a signature, in other words, I met with Ntabiseng, consulted with Ntabiseng,
yes.
drew up the will, we agreed on what I want on the will, you were to send it back to me for a signature, and perhaps for whatever reason I pass on. Would that be valid?
So it's been determined by courts. There's actually two schools of thought when it comes to that particular aspect. Some courts say then you'll be deemed to not have a will, period, and therefore you have died intestate. But other courts have said that if you can show the consultation notes, that's why it's important when you're coming for a consultation, we fill
yes.
in those pro formas or whatever, bring down yes. your wishes there. So when I submit these pro formas or consultation notes with dates that you came on the 17th, 18th of September 2024, and then there was email communication wherein I was going to send you the draft. I can prove all of that these were your intentions. It was not fraudulent. It's just that unfortunately you died prior to signing. If that can be proven, some courts have said yes, that can be an acceptable will. So it depends if somebody's challenging it, one.
Yes.
Two, if the master's office is refusing to accept it because it doesn't conform mm-hmm. with the signature and witnesses
signature.
And all of mm-hmm. those things. When it's taken to court and the court confirms, no, it can be accepted because of these things, then it can be enrolled and then you can, you know, follow the normal process of winding up the deceased estate.
You must have seen many, many cases where there are one or two things missing.
Yes.
Maybe a signature, or someone says, no, this thing maybe was typed or was written for this particular person.
Yes.
Yes, that's his signature or her signature. But the handwriting of whatever was put here is not his.
Correct.
Or they did not have the time to go type this thing out.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in such instances, the courts have accepted that it doesn't have to be written with your own hand. It can be typed out. It can be whatever. It can even be written by me on your behalf.
Got you.
But what needs to be proven is that it was your intention.
This is it. And also, how lucid are you?
Yes. How free of mind and sober are you to confirm all of these things? That's why these witnesses are very important when they come in. It can't be witnesses who are family members. Don't do that. The law frowns upon that. I'm not actually sure. I'll have to double check, but I'm not actually sure the law says you should not have family members as witnesses. However, it's frowned upon because it is deemed that the family members may be in cahoots to ensure that the will either benefits somebody else in the family or whoever the case may be.
And ordinarily, not all family members are present.
That's correct.
And there could be a contestation thereof.
Yes.
So it may be that family members themselves are not good enough.
Correct.
As witnesses.
Correct. So if you're going to be doing it with an attorney, maybe members of the attorney's office can be witnesses to that will. So in other words, once it's done and dusted, it's read in front of them. So you can confirm in front of these witnesses that you understand what is in that particular will. Is this your intention that this will be like how it is? And once all of that is done, then you can sign, then they can sign. Every single page must be signed. This is to now avoid the things that we tend to see, that because page 2 wasn't signed, then a paragraph is somehow inserted in there, and which was never there in the original will. And now we are fighting in court to say, no, but this one was tempered with, here's the original will. So it's always advised through case law. Remember, these things are being developed because people cheat, people commit fraud.
That's it.
And then as a result, other things such as your signatures and dates and everything have to be like immediately after the last paragraph, so that to avoid any insertion of anything else in between certain aspects. So the courts have seen so many things that are similar to what you're saying. So in order to determine whether it was the intention of the testator to say, in Tabi Singh will be taking this particular cell phone upon my death, then when it's challenged, of course, then we go back into the history, the relationship of Ntabi Singh and the testator. We listen to the evidence of all the parties who are now challenging this. And then the court now tries to step in the shoes of the deceased to say, based on the evidence put before me, would I, as the deceased, have said what is being purported to be my last will and testament? So it's basically trying to be as objective as possible to assume whether or not a testator would have written the words that are put in any particular will.
Can a will, and I think I'm asking an obvious question, but let me ask it anyway, expire in the sense that you had a will?
Yeah.
Yonks ago, and maybe you forgot about it.
Yeah.
Ne? And maybe when you had it drawn up, you did not have, for instance, children at the time. The date states that.
Yes.
And you pass on. And suddenly this thing props up. And at the time, you had not had, and you had not had children or whatever, your life was very different to what it looks like. Can your children then contest that will? In other words, Ntabi Singh was in love with a boyfriend. Tabi Singh decided that, well, this is the one person who's left anyway. I don't have anybody else, maybe. And I would leave whatever to X person X.
Mm.
Tabi Singh subsequently moves on with life.
Yeah.
Person X is no longer a significant other. Mm. And life really has changed. Can your family or your children or your descendants contest a will that is so-called outdated?
No. So what they can do is lodge a claim for maintenance against the deceased estate. So if...
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
Maintenance and your wealth are not the same.
That's very correct.
So if someone has been... If someone has inherited your entire estate and your wealth, it's not the same as maintenance.
Yes. So that's why it's important when you draft a will, because you can't forget that you've done
this. That's
what
I'm saying, yeah.
When you decide 10 years later, oh, wait, I've accumulated all of these things. The very first clause of your will is what you call a repudiation clause.
Mm.
You repudiate all wills that came before this one. And this one is now deemed to be
the one.
The one. That is my last will.
If you don't write that first clause,
then those wills will be clashing. So somebody may bring it and say,
yes,
this is the one that is valid, because
that's
it's not repudiated.
It, yes,
it means this one is valid.
Does the date mean anything?
And of course, the courts will look at the dates, but because it's not repudiated, now
Good
the court
Lord.
Has to decide which one should be looked at.
Okay, let's take a listen to a voice note.
Good evening, ladies. Another question. If I've got a civil case, and then I'm the complainant, and then the court rules in my favor, and then the person I'm in court with is supposed to maybe pay me whatever that is due to me, as the court has ruled, and then if that person does not comply or defaults on those payments, what's the necessary steps that can be taken, or what can the court do for me after that?
Okay, so in the first scenario, you say if they don't pay at all or not honor the court order. Second, you said default. So if they don't honor the court order, period, you have the option of getting the matter back into the court's hands, and then either applying for a contempt of court application, a civil contempt of court, where they can sanction a criminal, you know, sentence upon the person, or compel him to adhere to the court order. Or you can also find yourself being lucky enough to get a warrant of execution, wherein you can go and attach certain property to satisfy the debt, basically, as per the court order.
Mm-hmm.
But if this person has been defaulting, mm-hmm, then you can also, you still have all of those options available to you, but you just subtracting the amount that has been paid thus far. So just take it back to the court and make sure that, you know, you get what is due to you. But please be mindful of the Prescription Act.
Mm-hmm.
If 3 years pass without you acting on it, the courts may not look at it. I'm not saying it's a guarantee that they will not look at it, but they may not look at it. Yeah.
Okay. We're very happy to take more of these questions, by the way. 063-688-0959 via voice note. Or if you have a more detailed or more elaborate question, call in 086-000-00959. Spoo here on X is asking, where, we may have touched on this last week, where can I go for my last will and testament? Where do I keep it, a bank or? So you and I spoke about being careful about using the bank.
Yes.
Because they always find a way.
They'll
to
find
attach
a
product.
Yeah.
To attach a product.
Yes. And then you're going to pay for them holding your will forever until...
Yeah.
Your death. So right now, up until Friday, go to any law firm. Well, not any. Some are registered, some are not. But a good majority of law firms are doing it for free.
So explain what the products are. So what are you paying for?
It's like an estate a state insurance policy of
yes.
sorts.
And what does that do?
So they say they're going to draft your will for you,
mm-hmm.
and then they're going to make sure that they are the executors
yes.
of your estate so that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands,
mm.
and therefore you don't have to worry about your children or mm. whoever who's left behind struggling in winding up the estate, and therefore you are paying for those benefits.
Mm.
That's what they're saying.
So, in other words, you have already appointed an executor.
Yes.
Before
one that is not your personal choice.
Person you don't know.
Yes.
It's just a bank, an
yes.
entity.
Yes.
And they are essentially the people who are going to be running your estate.
That's correct.
Can, upon your death, the family contest that and decide there is somebody else who's an executor here?
Because it was the wishes of the testator.
You chose the bank.
Yes.
So when you go and sign this will and have this policy with the bank, you're essentially saying you will believe the bank and you will entrust the bank to be the ones managing your affairs entirely.
That's correct.
Nobody else.
Well, that is very correct. And over and above that, remember, at the end of the day, the bank's mandate is to get a profit in one form or another.
Mm.
So from that estate, because you're already paying certain policy
yes.
payments every month, over and above the 3.5% that is mandatory per the Act, they will probably list themselves as creditors because now the payments have stopped from your side.
Mm.
So they still need to claim that. And
over
and
above that.
Yes.
Yeah. So every because you've stopped paying your premium.
Yes. Yes, so there's going to... I know of cases where in when the bank realizes that the estate is actually insolvent,
so
they withdraw because they are not going to get anything from that estate. And then you as a family now have to scramble to try and find an attorney to assist you wind up the estate. This person has been deceased for 2 years now, so the deceased has been standing... The estate has been standing still. So that's why I am not a big fan of having financial institutions wind up estates. For me, we've
just,
had to...
I mean, this is, I guess, just being careful.
Yes.
Right? Because especially now that it is Will's Week
mm.
and it has been Will's Month, of course, everybody's going to raise their hand and say, we want to draw this up for you. I have had so many calls
yes.
from random, you know, these call centers.
Mm.
I don't even know what institutions they represent, but I kept thinking, why on earth would an entire call center be calling just to offer a will? I
yeah.
mean, what's the
catch?
Yes.
Mm.
And also, what's their benefit
mm.
for them? And it's because they're selling a product
That's
over
correct.
And above giving you the free will.
Yes. Yes.
So it's not so free, folks.
No, it's really not so free. So just go to the nearest attorney that you have, inquire if they're doing wills, they're part of the Wills Week program with LEED, and if they are, they'll draft you a will right then and there. You leave with it. You can leave a copy with them. You can take original, or they can make two originals. One you go with, one you leave with them. You don't have to pay a cent for the attorney to hold
mm.
that will. The executor can be whomever you want it to be.
Mm.
You don't have to make anybody in that particular law firm to be an executor of your
mm.
estate.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so when you get these calls, just be a little bit mindful.
Yes.
That you do not, you know what you're doing.
Mm.
You know what you're getting yourself into.
Yes, yes.
There's a voice note.
Good evening. What legal recourse do I have? I bought a property and being a first-time buyer, did was not professional in looking at everything. Then hardly 2 years down the line, the houses started cracking in every other room. Then what I wanted to find out is, do I have a recourse against the seller? Because I've tried the bank. Insurance, and they've declined that because they're saying the cracks are pre-existing, which to me says the cracks were there before I bought the property.
Yeah.
Please, can you help me on this?
Yeah, no, this happens a lot. And there's a clause that you will find in all offers to purchase that you buy the property footstool as is.
Or there are clauses where the agent absolves themselves.
Yes.
In fact, I've seen a clause where not just the agent, but the seller The seller being, so it's a deceased estate, the seller being a child or whoever inherited this property, who says, well, I haven't been living here. I don't know what defects are in this property. Therefore, I am declaring right now that I'm not responsible for anything that comes your way should there be a defect.
Yeah. And with the time frame that he's saying, with 2 years.
That's very soon.
It's something wherein the courts are... They're divided also as to whether or not you would have recourse against the previous owner of the property. So I would advise that go to an attorney, have the attorney look through what the contract says and see how it is that the owner stroke agent have tried to cover themselves in what we call a mala fide way. So they were not forthcoming. It was in bad faith, the way that this contract was drafted. And if that's the case, then you do have recourse to do so. But without having a look at that offer to purchase, I can't really give you an exact yes, you've got recourse or no.
So we've got another voice note.
I would like to know, I just recently opened a case of domestic violence, and the person was arrested on Friday. Then I think on Saturday, the person was out. So people told me that the person is out. I never got a call from the police or anybody else. I had to go back to the police station to find out how did he come out. I went to the officer who was handling my case. And so then when I asked her about this case, like what happened, how did this person come out, she kind of like told me that the court just let him go because of my statement doesn't make sense. They don't understand how did he break the door. Was there someone or what? You understand? And when I wrote my statement, it was a statement of gender-based violence because of the person was literally threatening to kill me. Even now, he's busy telling people that he wants to buy someone to come and kill me. You see, so now where I am, I'm in hiding, like I'm not safe at all. So I want to know, what must I do in this kind of situation? Thank you, Pam.
You've seen this, ne? You've seen this,
yes.
Where everybody's gets bribed and cases just disappear.
Yeah. So the first thing is that could have been the situation. The second thing could have been that he got himself what you call after hours bail or police bail. From what I can gather, there doesn't sound like there was any physical harm that was done to her person, but he was trying to break the door and whatever. They probably put it under the umbrella of MITP, which is a Schedule 1 offense, which is malicious injury to property or damage to property, which is a Schedule 1 offense. Because if they had put it under the Domestic Violence Act in that manner, there's now a mandate that is out that is with regard to partners such as those who are in a romantic relationship, the accused or the person who's the suspect must not be granted either prosecutor bail or police bail, which is basically after hours bail, but bail must be conducted in
the
court.
Yeah.
So that to afford this person an opportunity for safety for that 48 hours at least. So what I would suggest is that you request the docket, because when you went to go give your statement, they gave that statement what we call an A1 number. That A1 number has to be attached to a CAS number in the docket, CAS number. Get that CAS number. Find out what happened. Because if they're saying to you that the court said there's not sufficient evidence, it means it went into the hands of a prosecutor. That prosecutor should have written in the docket that it's a nolle prosecute docket because of the merits. Request for that information. If they don't have it, then you report to the IO or the person, the arresting officer.
Okay, wait. Where is she requesting this information?
She goes to the police station and requests the CAS number, right?
Okay. And so, let's just stop by step. You must go back to the police station.
Correct. And then you request a CAS number.
She obviously feels unsafe.
Yes.
Does she have to physically do that herself? Or
yes,
she can get the lawyer? The lawyer will not.
Oh, yes. The lawyer can do that.
Okay. So either yourself or the lawyer.
Yes.
Ne? Okay.
Yes. Go and request the CAS number for that docket. They ought to they ought to have SMS'd it to her once it was opened. But I, at this rate, I don't think she got such an SMS. But you request the CAS number because you know who it was that took down your statement. With that CAS number, you request the docket information. You want to see the Nolle Prosecute certificate from the SPP, the Senior Public Prosecutor.
So you want to see what's in the docket,
yes.
Basically.
Yes, yes. That confirms that the court said that there are no merits for this particular matter, hence it is withdrawn. That certificate is called a Nolle Prosecute certificate. If that doesn't exist, mm-hmm. it means this matter never got into the courtroom.
Yes.
And therefore, you must report the person who gave you this information to their commander, the station commander, to say, I opened a docket with Ntabiseng. Ntabiseng said to me this. This is the docket number. And in this docket, nothing of this sort happened. Or if you're not getting joy in getting information from the docket, still go to the station commander and say, I'm not getting any joy. I want to know what is happening in this particular docket.
Okay.
Yes.
It would be nice if you get a lawyer to assist you with the process.
Yeah.
But you can escalate and escalate and escalate.
Correct.
And you can.
Correct.
I don't think you must give up.
No, please don't.
Keep escalating, and I think it's possible.
Yes.
Should we take a quick break? Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be looking at more of those voice notes coming through on 0636880959. You can also call, by the way, 0860000959. All right, let's take those calls on 0860000959. Ntabiseng Dubazana is here to answer all your legal questions. You can also send voice notes on 0636880959. And we were just talking earlier on about being practical about what could happen. So not all of these cases are necessarily corrupt or somebody asked for a bribe. It's as simple as sometimes being incompetent.
That is very true. So, for example, in this particular case, it is likely, like I said, that the matter was put under the umbrella of this malicious damage to property case. And then they looked at the case and then they released him.
Because as the citizen, when you go in, you are not going to say to whoever is taking down the statement, I want it to be under whatever.
Mm.
They just simply ask, so what happened?
Mm.
What's it? Then the person says, no, nantinne kara halabati.
Yeah.
Okay, umutswer, no agamutswara. Umushapil, agamushap. So when I went say, urobile lebati. Okay, obo. Anyway, he's laughing. No, Tom Sharp. I nicky battle mutsus. Oh, no, Cassam Sharp. Okay. So, Mus Little Nalati. I'm on Briar Catamaluxan to Zin.
Yeah,
I got a gum sharp and not gum sharp. Okay. And then that's how it goes.
That's how the cookie crumbles, yeah. And then more.
And then it's no longer domestic violence.
Yes.
It's malicious damage to property.
Yes.
La Uga.
Yes.
So what then would have changed the scenario is to verbally say to whoever's taking the statement, do you have to add, I felt threatened?
Yes.
Do you have to add what verbal abuse? What do you have to say
Very
so that
important.
This thing is clear? This is domestic violence. It was not malicious damage to property.
Very important. You need to say this person was threatening to kill me as he was kicking down the door. This person, or trying to kick down the door. This person was insulting me. Because now you're adding other charges. Because when they read into it, they're seeing, oh, intimidation is there. It's an additional charge. Over and above.
So it sometimes sounds like we're being silly, eh?
Yes.
But In that moment, I know sometimes you're also going through your own emotions.
Mm.
Be very specific.
Bring
the details.
Mm.
And it may not feel okay at the time because you feel embarrassed. Because domestic violence issues and cases are usually embarrassing.
Yes.
So you may not want to tell the officer exactly what happened and what he did or she did.
Mm.
But actually, it's what you need to do.
Yes.
Even if the story is uncomfortable to tell and a little bit, you know, unsavory.
Yes.
You have to say.
Agreed.
You have to say, you know, he threw a cigarette at me.
Yes.
Whatever.
Agreed, because those things add in other elements of other charges, because now we're reading into intimidation, now we're reading into King, he threatened me, there is all sorts of that now falls under common assault.
But no, I agree. So, but you must say it.
Yes.
You must, as a guy, if you get to the police station and you're embarrassed about what happened, you must say, no, kitakile, but you must say, ungatile ka plate.
Yes. Say those things because they work for you in the long run. And then when somebody takes this matter to a prosecutor to go look at, if that prosecutor decides to attach an early prosecution certificate, they must explain why. Because when we look at the A1 statement and things that were put there, there's a lot more happening here than what you have decided. Have you looked at all the other elements of all the other crimes before you decided that there's not sufficient evidence for you to proceed? That's why some cases are set aside, because we don't give enough information.
And it's, as I said, you know, sometimes it's small details like oplakile metsi. And your impression of that action was that unotlouchisake metsi. So, and of course, the person may defend it and say, no, I was going to, it's a kettle of water for D or whatever the case may be. But the point is that you must also verbalize what was being said at that moment.
Yes.
Get our bonds.
Yes. As I like that.
He didn't say, I'll kill you, but do lick our bonds. Whatever that means, you can go to court and contest those
kinds
of things.
That's correct. So give as much information as possible. But for now, OC must just escalate until she gets the kind of answers that she needs.
I get the feeling, as you were saying, she's now in hiding.
Mm.
Let's talk a little bit about the issue of protection orders.
Yeah.
Because those were for a long time an issue.
Mm.
When you get it and when it's useless.
I will say this as I remove the attorney hat and put it on the side.
Mm.
A domestic violence order, unfortunately, it's a piece of paper.
Mm.
It doesn't give
protect
bars
you.
That's
it
going to prevent this person
you.
From coming to attack you in any manner or form.
Yeah.
Now, when I put the lawyer hat back, as soon as the first feeling of intimidation or harassment happens, there's the Domestic Violence Act, there's the Prevention of Harassment Act. Please approach your nearest court. You approach the court in these particular aspects. There's two different forms for you to fill in. And when you do that, you give as much detail as possible.
Wait, okay. The lady that we were just talking about,
yes.
I think, if I remember the story correctly, is not saying that the guy has now called her to kill her. He's telling other people,
Khori, yes, that is covered in both these acts. Mm. That you cannot, you put in there, he should not use third parties to intimidate you or to harass you.
Even if it's an SMS or a WhatsApp.
Yes.
Or any other post.
Correct.
Because sometimes, mutua poster on status, sahai. Kito bulai.
And then I read it,
Basadi Mati.
Yeah.
This is, and it, he rents.
Yeah.
On his status, right?
Yeah.
And you believe it's about you. Kitabula mut. He goes on and on and on.
Yes.
Let's take a listen to a voice note.
I just wanted to find out, like, I've applied for REF. I had an accident in 2019. And then I got the lawyer who I went to so that they can help me out with the claim for like a TREF. But every year, like, I've been asking her, she said she hasn't been getting a date. Up until recently, she said she got a date for 2029 March. So my question is, like, I started the claim in 2021. So I wanted to find out if I've been taken for a ride or can you retake that so much years before you get a court date and then your case sorted out.
Yeah,
you
no.
spoke about this. You can directly check for yourself.
You can go straight to the court.
Forget the lawyer now.
Yes, and see what vele is there a date such as this. And because this matter started in 2019, from my audit, is the accident in 2019. whenever. But if it happened before COVID, then likely is that it didn't start on what we call court online or case lines, where you can just log in using your case number and try and see what is happening with the matter. So go to the court where it's being held, probably in Pretoria High Court or Johannesburg High Court, with your case number, find out whether or not the date is what it is. But to tell you the truth, unfortunately, in the Joburg and the Pretoria High Courts, we are struggling with dates. We are struggling. Opposed matters, we are getting dates in 2030, 2029 from now. Unopposed matters, we are getting 2026. 2028. So she or he is not pulling your leg when it comes to dates, especially in Johannesburg. So yeah, but besides that, just go and double check, see if that's the correct date, and then if that's the case, then it's most likely because of what's happening in Gauteng. We are struggling with getting dates,
but it's also possible that this lawyer,
it is very likely.
So let's just go through what's possible. If let's park that scenario where it's possible that, you know, the dates, it's true, that it's they're late. We all know this, they're running behind. But how does he check his own matter?
So you go to the court where the matter is being heard with your case number. You go to the registrar of the civil court, right? When you get there, you give them your case number. You inform them that you are the plaintiff in this particular matter, because RAF matters are what we call action matters. You tell them you are the plaintiff in that matter. You want to find out if there is a date. Now, when you get there, all matters prior to COVID, most of them are going to be heard, or they're going to be written down by hand, or you're going to be notified via email of the dates. Unlike currently now, we just log on to court online or case lines and check whether or not a date has been assigned. So you go there to the registrar, and then they go through the file and check if indeed there is a date. If there is a date, who is the presiding officer who has been assigned to it? If there's none yet, it's fine. That will be assigned closer to the date. But we'll just go and follow that particular step.
There is another way. He can go directly to RAF.
Yes.
And just log in his own personal details and check.
Yes.
You can go to UIF if it's a UIF matter. You can go to REF if it's a REF matter. Go directly to their website.
Yes.
Log in your details and see if there's anything there
that
reflects what looks like your case.
That's correct, yes.
Because if nothing comes up, I mean, two things can happen. Either there's nothing or you've been paid out already, actually. That maybe the story about 2029 is not... Maybe they've already paid you out, and you would be able to see how much
that's correct
was paid out to you and the attorney. So very, very important. You can do that yourself. You can go and have a look. We were speaking a bit about the domestic violence issue and the protection order.
Yes.
And you were saying that the paper itself has its limitations because it's just a document.
Yes. But it has a lot of legal weight behind it. Unfortunately, our law is reactionary instead of preventative. So once you have gone through what you've gone through, and then you now approach the court to start the process of applying for a domestic violence protection order, then in that form that you fill in, when they ask you what happened, give us a story, the block is very small. You're not obligated to just fill in that particular block. Type a full-on statement, because that thing is actually your affidavit. It's going to be commissioned and all of that, that form that you're filling in. So for that block, you just write in the please see attached statement, so you can give as much detail as possible on what has transpired. Because if you fill in only in that particular box, you're not going to put in the entire story. And they're going to look at it and be like, no, man. Yeah, they will grant you the papers to go serve to the other party, but the presiding officer is going to look at it and say, but I'm not understanding why we're here. So just make, whether it's written or typed out, doesn't matter, but put in a statement wherein you put in every single detail. And then on the other pages there, they ask you, what is it that you specifically want this person to not do, right? So I don't want him to call me, come to my workplace, send me messages, emails, not to use third parties, not to put up anything. You put everything there. And then there is also a section, let's say this is a situation wherein this person was the breadwinner. And now if they happen to leave or this protection order, kicks them out in some manner, then you put there's a section where it says that he should not financially abuse. You must continue to do
paying
the responsibilities
or whatever they.
Yes,
yeah,
so those things are in there, and the clerks need to explain this to people who are coming to get this help, because I just give them a form, say fill in.
Does a person who's coming in for domestic violence? I want to distinguish between what happens, what's required with a rape case, and domestic violence. Do you have to go to the police at that time? In other words, if you delay going to the police, does it affect your case?
No, it doesn't affect your case. It's even better if, let's say, the order is granted, you have your protection order, it comes automatically with a warrant of arrest. So if this person comes to your premises, does any of those things listed there that he shouldn't do, that we officially made an order of court, you go to the police station and say, he, she has done this.
In other words, if you feel that it's better for you to find safe space somewhere else, and maybe you feel that that police station is not safe for whatever reason, you must do that. You can go and regroup and type out the statement properly.
Yes.
If you feel that you need time and the pressure, because there's also the thing about being in the police station and the pressure of writing out the statement. If you feel that it's better to rather go somewhere else or go home, wherever, where you can recollect your thoughts and type it out properly, and then take that with you once you've done that.
Yes.
Because sometimes you get to the police station and you're under pressure, man. Hurry up. There's a queue here. Hey, people are here for other reasons. There's a lot of noise. You can't focus, and whatever the case may be. And you find that you can't write the statement properly there.
Yeah.
Write it at home. Bring it with you to the police station when you are done.
Yes.
And then submit it in that way.
Agreed fully. And also, besides the issue of the pressure, sometimes you are giving your statement in your mother tongue. And
well, also, I'm sorry.
The English.
I'm really very sorry about this, because I'm going to say something that sounds unkind.
Yeah.
I have seen officers.
Yes.
Who do not write what you've said must be written.
It happens all the time.
Yeah. And it's your responsibility to make sure your statement is exactly as it is stated.
That is correct.
On the document.
Yes.
They sometimes don't give you the paper. And then the person writes. But when you look, it's not what
you're
said.
Saying. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's just better to type it out, because you'll be speaking Gasasotho and this person is hearing you Gasasotho. Maybe they're Zulu speaking.
Or no. When you're speaking in whatever language. Yeah, nah. He is interpreting it.
That's
in
what I'm saying.
Himself.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then when he puts it down on paper, it's not what you said. And when you go into court and you meet a defense attorney who says you made a statement, you say yes. And it was written for you, yes. Did you confirm that it's your statement, yes? Did you sign to confirm it's your statement, yes? Then why is it that what you're saying in court
doesn't
now doesn't correspond with this? Because the state relied
on
this.
Doesn't corroborate with this. And often the cases go wrong there.
Yeah, right there.
Where and they would say, you are changing your statement.
That is correct.
And that's already right there is a problem.
Yes, because now we have two different versions of what happened on the day in question. So what should the court believe here? So rather just type it out yourself. Take it to the police station. Let it be your A1 statement or your complaint statement or whatever. And then take it from there.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with your calls on 086-000-0959. We'll be back with those voice notes as well. 063-688-0959. Any legal question, Thabiseng is here and you can throw them at her for absolutely nothing. All right, it's 20 minutes to 10 o'clock. We keep taking your calls. We keep taking your voice notes on 063-688-0959. And you can call on 086-000-0959 for any legal question you may have. And Thabiseng is here to assist.
Yes. So we were trying to just iron out the issues of wills, just so that people yes. know what it is that they should put into their wills yeah. and whatnot. Don't wait until you have accumulated wealth before you can do
it. That is such an interesting point. It's not about you having the money.
Yes.
The will is not about... Everybody can have a will.
That's correct. Mm. So whether you are living Mkhukhwini in a RDP house, in the mansion in Bryanston, please ensure that you have a will, because we don't want a situation where in your passed on and now we're dealing with your estate as an interstate situation, because your assets will not be distributed in a manner in which you would like it to be. Because whether or not you leave a will, your estate still has to be wound up in one manner or another, because winding up the estate is essentially informing the government that yes, you've passed on, but over and above that, all their liabilities, obligations, assets, they are gone with this person. Mm. And this is the proof, because the estate has now been wound up. Mm. The assets have been given to the beneficiaries. Mm. And this is the situation. So if you leave things as they are, you find a situation whereby we've got parents who did not have estates, wills, I beg your pardon, and now their houses are deemed to be family homes, yet they are registered under Mama
Lepa. And then they fight.
And then siblings are fighting.
No, siblings fight with uncles.
Yes.
And grandchildren, because the aunt had children there.
Yeah.
And so how are you going to... Because the grandchildren who are born in that house...
Mm.
This is the only home they know.
Yes.
Okay, let's go to Max in Daveyton. Max, hi. Hello, Max.
My daughter was brutally killed. That was 2015, was raped in Val.
Mm.
Even today, I don't know what's the story, what's happening.
Max, when did this happen?
In 2016.
Okay.
And a docket was opened.
I'm sorry, 2016, if I'm not mistaken. 2016.
1-6, okay.
And a docket was opened in that?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have the CAS number, the CAS number of the docket?
I've got a case number.
Okay, even the case number for court as well, you have that?
No, I've got only the case number.
Okay, no, it's fine.
Yes.
So what you need to do is find out... Oh, wait, before you go there, was the matter ever, ever in court, even for your first appearance?
Nothing. Nobody was arrested.
Was arrested. Okay, then it means it's a cold case. So what you need to find out is go to the police station. I know you've probably done this a million times, but you, with the CAS number, you... request and find out from the station commander. If you get no joy, go to the his senior, so on and so forth, so that you can get an understanding of if there was any investigations, what is the result of that investigation. Because if it's a cold case, it means it has moved from the main police station to an outside, so to speak, police station, wherein they deal strictly with cold cases, trying to trace them as to how they can find a suspect there. That is the only reason I can think why there was never any arrest, and why the docket has never, any accused, sorry, has never seen the inside of a courtroom.
Sorry, Max. Were there... Okay. I don't know what's the legal language to ask this question, but were there suspects? You know, the kind of suspects that you and I suspect?
I don't know, because I just got a call.
Yeah.
Then she was in the cell for something like 5 days, because the body was decomposed or whatever.
So you don't have anybody... that you think, as a family or anyone close to her, who says, we suspect this happened or this person was involved? You don't know any, nothing like that happened?
I had the name. So I gave it to the investigator.
That's what I wanted to know, yeah.
Mm.
So yes, you had a bit of a lead. A bit of a lead.
The guy calls by So when I go there to meet him, he always tell me that we don't have transport.
Oh.
He's having this sense of Maywa case, all those things.
Sure.
No, man. Then in that case, it can't be at court.
Where was this? Where was this case?
In Thunder Bay.
Thunder Bay.
Yes.
Because if the IO is going to be complaining about transport, then it's not about lack.
It's not about that there isn't enough evidence together. They're just not doing anything.
They're not doing anything. Have you complained to the station commander or anyone above the IO as yet?
No, not yet.
Please do that.
This is 2015.
Yeah.
Yes.
We need to escalate it.
Yes.
We need to escalate it
as soon as possible. Because the IO, when you don't report people who are not doing their work, they become complacent and they don't do what needs to be done. The investigating officer should at least be giving you feedback to say, the person that you mentioned, we went to investigate and we didn't find anything, or that he ran away, whatever. But since he's not doing anything, please escalate it to his boss, to the station commander, please.
Max, it would be nice if you got back to us.
Okay.
Please, man, so that we can see if we can assist.
Okay, I'll do so. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. We've got a voice note.
Evening. When you buy a house, what red flags in terms of documentation and estates should you take into consideration and double check before purchasing?
So please, first and foremost, go and view the house. You know the people that...
So they buy online.
Don't do that. Don't get charmed because it looks nice on the outside and all of that. Or online.
Or online auction.
Please don't. Go and actually view the property. Investigate it.
Online auction?
Don't do that. Because you are being sold the house footstools. They're not
auction.
Going to try and this is the thing. Online auctions don't actually give you permission, so to speak, to go and view the property. Then don't buy it. Okay. Let's
No. But it's important.
It is important.
Because sometimes you think you've hit a jackpot.
Yeah.
Kandi, you've seen pictures that are strategically taken.
Yes.
Because you are not there to see things that they did not take pictures
That's
of.
That's correct. So once you've viewed the property and you've asked the questions that you see, and don't be scared to ask the questions. If you see a crack here, ask, is it because there's renovations? Was there water leaking? All of those things. Once all of that is done and you're happy with the answers that you get, when the offer to purchase is now drafted, you have 7 days to take it to an attorney or anybody that you trust for them to review it and see if it conforms to what it is that you want. And if you had seen issues when you went to go view the property, raise it and say, in the bathroom, I saw that the bathtub had a crack in the middle. Who's going to address that so that it can be in the contract? I saw that the electricity, there's an issue there and all of that. As the owner going to fix it before I buy it? Or if I'm going to buy it, can we remove it from the purchase price? You know, all of those things. And also insist, I know people don't like doing it, but insist on moving in before the property is transferred.
Really?
Insist on it.
Really?
You can pay the rent.
You can pay the rent.
You can pay that rental thing because
oh
if it's
word.
Not transferred
That's
yet,
such a clever advice.
And it's still the property of the previous owner, and any issues you find in the time that you're there, you can raise them and escalate.
That is very clever advice.
So you put it in the contract that you're willing to move in as soon as yesterday, and then you pay the occupational rent, right? And then
because you're going to see leaking toilets.
Yes, and then you raise them. Because until it's transferred into your name, anything that is a problem there is still the problem of the
Does
owner.
It, even if those issues are not in your contract,
yes.
in your offer to purchase.
Because remember, the owner is still paying the levies. Everything pertaining to that property is still in the name of Pamela, not
but, entirely but I get it in the offer to purchase.
Mm.
They did not state all of
yes.
these things. And therefore, they may think, well, you didn't say that we need to fix 1, 2, 3.
No.
You came to see the property and this is it.
No, the property is still yours. It's not mine. I just paid. It has not been transferred into my name. So any issue
but
that
how
is
do you
arising
force,
there...
How do you force the owner to fix those things?
You put it... You take pictures and everything. You note it down and you send it before the property is transferred into your name. And then you say, per the issues that were raised in the initial observation, I was not privy to or could not have seen or foreseen that these things could have been there as a problem. Therefore, either I fix it because I'm paying occupational rent and then you deduct it from the purchase price, or you fix them. Because currently I'm paying you money to be here. I'm your tenant. Fix the property. That's why you move in.
Okay, we've got another voice note.
Hello, Phimelo and Thabiseng. Thabiseng, please explain the role of an executor in will drafting. Can one choose not to appoint an executor and then just make the will, as we would see, Gumasopi at TV, after death, the family will be called in an attorney's office, and then an attorney will just read what's in the will for the whole family without any other person, an executor. Another question, a will done for free during Will's week, does one have to pay for its safekeeping, and then how is it paid?
Okay,
very good question.
Yeah, no, the last one is easy to answer. There's no payment for keeping the will. You can just do whatever when you go. There's no consultation fee, nothing. You just walk in, you do your will. That's that. The first one, please don't make the mistake that you're hoping and not appoint an executor, because our law wants an executor of the estate. So if it's somebody that you wouldn't want to be dealing with the estate, somebody's going to be appointed. And a family member can come in and say, since there's a will here and how an executor, I am going to fill in the initial forms and I'm going to name myself the next of kin. And then I'm going to distribute the estate, yes, per your will, but I'm going to get a 3.5%.
Very, very, very important. Other important issue. Guys, if you have assets from in one area, one jurisdiction, and another jurisdiction, be very careful that you have a will in all the jurisdictions. In other words, let's be simplistic. If you have a house, or even if it's what you so-called your family home, and it's your responsibility, let's say in Lesotho, and then you are here, so you basically are the guardian of this home in Lesotho, and you have your other assets here. I want to be as simplistic as that, but you think I can actually but you are the guardian of this home, your family home in Lesotho. You have got to have a will in Lesotho too, because what's here will be taken care of here.
Yes.
What's in Lesotho will be taken care of in Lesotho.
Correct. Correct. So always have an executor appointed in your will so that they can do due diligence with regard to your assets, your estate, whatever the case may be. Yes, there can be a big reading of the will in the lawyer's office. It's fine. But they must be whereby the executor is appointed, because if they disagree, someone's going to go and run to the master's office with the papers and make themselves an executor.
And I think there are jurisdictions where you can present a will from another place, like I think UK. But look, don't take the chance. Don't take the chance. Just do it.
Yes.
Do one in that other place, wherever it is, Lesotho, UK, wherever. Do one here. Do it in every jurisdiction where you have an asset.
Yes.
Okay. Or the secret bank account that you've been hiding away from your spouse.
Just been listening to the gentleman who was talking about Vanderbilt Park case and the treatment there. I think it's a bit concerning, and also I've experienced something very strange at that police station. You know, in a queue, you find people queuing, right? And people are there for different reasons, right? And sometimes there would be an officer who goes around on the queue and asking people why they're there. And you find people explaining, you know, maybe it's a murder case or it's whatever that brought them to the police station, and all of us are listening to this person. And I think it's very insensitive in terms of how they deal with people at Vanderbilt Park police station. And I thought to myself as I was queuing, right, if it's a rape case and you've been raped, Imagine now having to explain to a police officer, and there are people who are listening to you. You are on the queue, and you have to now explain to this police officer that I'm here because I've been raped and so and so and so on. I think they need to do better in terms of servicing their community. It's ridiculous what's happening there. I mean, I was just there for an affidavit, and there I was listening to people talking about accidents, to people talking about different things that have happened, and I'm thinking to myself, is there no better way of dealing with this?
That's, and imagine and now you have to elaborate in the queue.
Yes, and it's not unique to Van der Bijl, unfortunately. It happens in a lot of police stations. I don't know if it's a matter of trying to see how many officers who come into the front and assist.
And who needs what kind of help.
What kind of help and whatnot. But then if you can just give a one-liner, and they do what you just said. Yeah, and then? Okay, so what do you want here? After you explain the story.
No. How would they? Then you see now.
Yes.
It spirals out of control.
Yes. So. That's exactly what happens. And what happened? The Nuka go fellow, and the station goes quiet because now we're listening to this person laughing.
And he's disinterested at this point.
Yeah.
Is it that high?
Yeah.
He's not on your side.
No.
He's not on your side.
It's not happening.
Constable. Tell him what you say. Hi, Osmonari. Hi, Nakizi. Arumunayamurapi. It's not good.
No.
Okay, I'm sorry to do this to you. And Tavi saying, where do people find you?
We are at 272 Oak Avenue in Randburg. We're on the ground floor of SG2. Otherwise, you can call on 087-265-8010. Send a WhatsApp 079-654-7523 or send an email to info@dubazana.co.za.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.